Hey everyone, get ready for some exciting news. We've got a total lunar eclipse coming to North America on March 13th and 14th, 2025.
Oh yeah.
It's been a while, 3 years to be exact, since we last saw one from North America, so this is going to be pretty special.
Yeah.
And before we really dive in, I want to remind you to follow meteorologist Rob Jones.
Okay.
He's on Instagram meteorologist, on TikTok TV meteorologist, and on YouTube, you can follow Rob Jones Hurricane.
Great.
That's also where you can find the Meteorology Matters podcast playlist.
Awesome.
You know, we're not just going to talk about what causes a lunar eclipse. We'll also figure out the best viewing spots across the U.S.
Okay.
We'll unravel some pretty cool facts about the March full moon.
Right.
And hopefully answer some questions you didn't even know you had.
Sounds good.
So, let's get started.
Okay.
Could you walk us through what happens during a total lunar eclipse?
Sure.
I know it has something to do with the sun, earth, and moon lining up, but what's the science behind this cosmic ballet?
Yeah, you're right. It's all about alignment.
Okay.
Astronomers call it syzygy. When the sun, earth, and moon form, well, a nearly straight line in space.
Uh-huh.
Now, during a lunar eclipse, the earth is right in the middle, blocking the sun's light from reaching the moon.
I see.
So picture the earth's shadow, or what astronomers call the umbra. It slowly creeps across the lunar surface.
Okay.
As the moon moves deeper into the umbra,
yeah,
it gets darker and darker.
Yeah.
But here's where it gets really interesting.
Okay.
During totality,
mm-hmm.
when the moon is completely engulfed in Earth's shadow, it doesn't just vanish.
Yeah.
It transforms into this really cool reddish-orange spectacle.
Wow.
We call it the famous blood moon.
Blood moon. That's so cool. It's like something out of a fantasy novel.
Yeah.
But why red?
Right.
Why not, say, blue or green?
Well, the reason has to do with Earth's atmosphere.
Okay.
Even though the Earth is blocking direct sunlight, some rays still manage to sneak through the edges of our planet's atmosphere. As this light passes through the air, it gets scattered and filtered.
Right.
The shorter wavelengths of light, like blue and green, get scattered away more easily,
right,
leaving behind the longer wavelengths, like red and orange. It's the same phenomenon that paints our sunsets and sunrises with those warm hues.
Ah, that makes so much sense. So the blood moon is like a giant cosmic sunset projected onto the lunar surface.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful way to think about it.
Yeah.
Now, I read that the shade of red can vary from eclipse to eclipse. Why is that?
That's a great question. And it really highlights how lunar eclipses can be a kind of celestial barometer for the health of our planet.
Hmm.
The shade of red during a lunar eclipse depends on what's happening in Earth's atmosphere.
Okay.
You know, if there's been a recent volcanic eruption, for example, and there's a lot of dust and aerosols in the upper atmosphere,
right,
the eclipse might appear a deeper, darker red.
Wow.
Conversely, a clear atmosphere might result in a brighter, almost coppery hue.
So we're not just watching a lunar eclipse. We're also getting a glimpse into the state of Earth's atmosphere. That's incredible.
Yeah.
I also heard that for this particular eclipse, the moon won't be passing directly through the center of the Earth's shadow.
Uh-huh.
So we might see the top half appearing brighter. Is that true?
That's absolutely correct. Mm-hmm. The moon's path through Earth's shadow isn't always perfectly central.
Yeah.
This time it's going to be slightly off center, meaning one side of the moon will be closer to the edge of the umbra where some sunlight can still reach it.
Yeah.
And that's why the top half might appear a bit brighter than the bottom half during totality. It's a subtle detail, but it adds another layer of intrigue to this already fascinating event.
I love those little details,
yeah,
the things that make each eclipse unique. So let's talk about where to catch this celestial spectacle. Obviously, clear skies are key.
Right.
But are there specific locations in the U.S. that will offer the best views?
Well, weather plays a huge role. And unfortunately, it looks like Mother Nature might throw a wrench in the plans for some of us this time. There's a large storm system brewing that's expected to move across the country right around the time of the eclipse.
Oh, no.
It'll bring extensive cloud cover to many areas.
Oh, that doesn't sound good.
Yeah.
So which areas are going to be hit the hardest by this cloud cover?
The far west, the Rockies, and the north central U.S.
Okay.
are likely going to face a blanket of clouds,
yeah,
making viewing difficult.
Right.
For example, Salt Lake City is predicted to have about 93% cloud cover.
Wow. Yep.
And the Northeast won't fare much better. There will be a fair amount of cloudiness expected there, too.
So we can rule those regions out for optimal viewing. What about the Rockies?
Right.
They're usually pretty sheer, right?
Unfortunately, not this time.
Oh.
The Rockies are actually in for a double whammy of clouds and snow.
Oh, no.
Not the best conditions for eclipse viewing.
So those are the no-go zones.
Huh?
But where can we find the clearest skies? Mm. You know, the prime real estate for eclipse viewing.
Well, based on current weather models, the best viewing conditions look to be in a swath of the country stretching from Texas to the Ohio Valley.
Okay.
And southern Florida also looks promising.
Oh, good.
Miami, for instance, is predicted to have only about 3% cloud cover.
Now, those are some eclipse-worthy skies.
Yeah.
Clear skies and a blood moon.
Yeah.
What more could you ask for?
You're right about that. And I almost forgot to mention the Central Plains.
Okay.
Specifically Oklahoma, Kansas, and Missouri.
Yeah.
Those are shaping up to be solid options for clear viewing as well.
Excellent news for eclipse enthusiasts in those states.
Right.
Now, I can't let you go without asking about the Worm Moon.
Sure.
It's kind of a quirky name, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
What's the story behind that?
It's a fascinating blend of natural observations and Native American tradition.
Okay.
Historically, the March full moon often coincided with the emergence of earthworms as the ground began to thaw with the arrival of spring.
So it's a sign of nature reawakening after winter. I like that. Are there other names for the March full moon?
Absolutely. It's amazing how different cultures have observed the same celestial event and given it unique names reflecting their own traditions and experiences. Some Native American tribes called it the Eagle Moon, marking in the return of these majestic birds. Others referred to it as the Goose Moon, signifying the northward migration of geese.
Oh, wow.
There's also the Crow Comes Back Moon, the Sugar Moon, when maple sap starts to flow, the Windstrong Moon, highlighting the blustery weather often associated with March.
Oh, wow.
And even the Sore Eyes Moon, maybe referencing the glare of sunlight reflecting off the melting snow.
Wow, that's a whole collection of names, each one telling its own story. It's like looking up at the same moon, but seeing it through different cultural lenses. It really adds another dimension to this upcoming lunar eclipse, doesn't it?
It certainly does, and it makes you wonder how people in the past interpreted these celestial events. Imagine seeing a total lunar eclipse, this sudden darkening and reddening of the moon, without any scientific understanding of what was happening. It must have been a truly awe-inspiring and perhaps even frightening experience.
I can only imagine. So as we gear up for this total lunar eclipse, it's more than just a scientific phenomenon.
Right.
We're connecting to a long legacy of human wonder and storytelling.
Beautifully said. Who knows what stories and interpretations this particular eclipse will inspire in us?
Exactly. It's time to embrace the magic of the Worm Moon lunar eclipse because it promises to be an unforgettable experience.
It really does. Now that we've talked about what causes a lunar eclipse and where to see it, let's get down to the nitty-gritty.
Okay.
When exactly can you catch this lunar eclipse?
Yes, let's talk timings. I know folks are eager to plan their eclipse viewing parties.
Yeah, you're right. Timing is key for any celestial event.
Right.
And it varies depending on your location. We're talking time zones and all that.
Right, so break it down for us. What are the prime viewing times for different parts of the country?
Well, for those on the West Coast, the total lunar eclipse begins at 11.26 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time on March 13th.
Okay, West Coasters, set those alarms. What about the East Coast?
For those on the East Coast, things kick off a little later at 2.26 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time on March 14th.
Okay.
So basically, the farther east you are, the later you'll need to stay up or wake up to witness the full spectacle of the eclipse.
Got it. So we've got a late night show on the West Coast and an early morning spectacle on the East Coast.
Yeah.
And how long will this celestial show last?
Totality. You know that magical moment when the moon is completely bathed in Earth's shadow?
Yeah.
Will last for a little over an hour. Plenty of time to soak in the spectacle. And don't forget the partial phases of the eclipse when the moon is gradually moving into and out of Earth's shadow will be visible for a couple of hours before and after totality.
That's good to know. So even if you miss the peak moment, you can still catch some pretty incredible celestial choreography. Speaking of which, any tips on how to capture this cosmic ballet on camera?
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure our listeners will want to preserve the memory of this event.
Absolutely. And, you know, photographing a lunar eclipse can be a bit tricky, but with a few pointers, you can snag some stunning shots.
Okay.
First and foremost, ditch the shaky hands and use a tripod.
Right.
The long exposures needed to capture the eclipse will make handheld shots blurry.
A steady tripod is essential. Got
okay.
it. What about camera settings? Any advice there?
You'll need to experiment a bit.
Yeah.
But a good starting point is a low ISO setting, like 100 or 200, to minimize noise.
Okay.
For aperture, begin with a wide opening, like f8 or f11.
Okay.
This will allow more light in and help achieve a sharper focus.
Low ISO and wide aperture. Check. Now, for the big question, shutter speed.
Right.
What's the magic number?
Shutter speed. This is where things get fun. It's all about experimentation and finding what works for you. You'll need to adjust your shutter speed based on the brightness of the moon and the desired effect.
Okay.
You can start with a shorter exposure, maybe a second or two, and gradually increase it until you achieve the brightness and detail you're looking for.
So it's like a cosmic dance with your camera settings, tweaking and adjusting until you find that perfect rhythm.
Exactly. And don't forget to use your camera's timer or a remote shutter release to avoid any camera shake.
Right.
We want those photos to be crisp and clear.
No shaky hands allowed when we're capturing these celestial masterpieces. Any other pro tips?
If you really want to elevate your photos, try incorporating foreground elements like trees, buildings, or even silhouettes of people against the backdrop of the eclipsed moon.
Right.
It can add a sense of depth and scale to your photos.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah.
It's like turning a cosmic event into a work of art. It's all about expressing your own unique vision through the lens of this celestial phenomenon.
Exactly. And most importantly, have fun and enjoy the experience. It's not every day we get to witness this kind of celestial show.
Right.
Speaking of the blood moon.
Yes.
Are there any, cultural or historical beliefs associated with this reddish hue during a lunar eclipse?
That's a great point. It's not just about the science. It's about how different cultures have perceived and interpreted this event throughout history.
Right.
I'm actually curious to hear what you've uncovered.
Well, in some ancient cultures, the blood moon was seen as a bad omen, a sign of impending doom.
Okay.
They associated it with things like war, famine, or natural disasters.
I can understand why. The moon suddenly changing color could be pretty unsettling, especially if you didn't have the scientific knowledge to explain it.
Exactly. But not all cultures viewed it negatively.
Right.
For example, some Native American tribes saw it as a time of spiritual renewal and transformation.
Oh, wow.
A chance to connect with the cosmos, reflect on their lives, and seek guidance from the spirits.
It's interesting how the same celestial event can evoke such contrasting interpretations. It really speaks to the power of the sky to inspire both wonder and fear in us.
It really does. So, are you ready to explore some myths and legends associated with lunar eclipses in general?
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm always up for a good story, especially when it involves celestial beings and cosmic drama.
Well, one recurring theme you'll find in many cultures is the idea of a celestial being, often a dragon or a demon, devouring the moon during an eclipse.
Wow, that's quite the image. I can see why ancient people witnessing the moon disappear into darkness might imagine such a creature. Are there any specific myths you can share?
Of course. In Hindu mythology, there's a tale about a demon named Rahu who attempts to steal the elixir of immortality.
Uh-huh.
But the sun and moon spot him and alert the god Vishnu.
So Rahu's plan is foiled. What happens next?
Well, Vishnu, being the swift and powerful god that he is, cuts off Rahu's head before he can swallow the elixir.
Yikes, talk about a severe consequence.
Right. But here's the twist. Rahu's head, now immortal, continues to exist and seeks revenge by eternally chasing the sun and the moon.
Oh, wow. So that's how eclipses came to be.
Exactly. When Rahu catches up to either the sun or moon, he swallows it, causing an eclipse.
Okay.
But because he has no body, the sun or moon eventually passes through his severed neck and reappears.
That's a wild story.
Yeah.
It's amazing how mythology can offer such creative explanations for natural phenomena.
It really is. And there are countless other myths and legends from around the world that try to make sense of eclipses. It demonstrates the enduring power of storytelling and our innate desire to understand the world around us.
It makes you wonder what stories this upcoming eclipse will inspire in our modern age.
It does, doesn't it? Speaking of names, we've talked a lot about the blood moon.
Yeah.
But are there any other nicknames for lunar eclipses?
That's a good question. I'm curious to hear if there are any other evocative or descriptive names for this event.
Well, some are pretty straightforward, like copper moon or rusty moon, referring to that reddish-orange color.
Yeah.
Then there's the simple shadow moon,
right,
which is just a direct observation of what's happening. But one nickname I find particularly charming is the Flower Moon Eclipse.
Flower Moon Eclipse? That sounds beautiful. Why that name?
Well, this particular lunar eclipse is happening in March, which, as we discussed earlier, is traditionally known as the Flower Moon Month in some cultures.
Right. It's combining the type of eclipse with the time of year.
Exactly. It's a beautiful way to acknowledge both the celestial event and the seasonal context.
I love it. It's like a cosmic calendar marking the passage of time.
Yeah.
And it reminds us that we're all part of this grand celestial dance connected to the rhythms of the universe.
Absolutely.
It feels like we've covered a lot of ground, from the science behind eclipses to the myths that surround them, and even some tips on how to capture the perfect photo.
Yeah, we have.
Is there anything else you'd like to share before we move on to our final thoughts?
Well, I think we've covered the essentials.
Okay.
But I'm always eager to answer any questions you might have. Is there anything specific that piqued your curiosity?
Well, you mentioned earlier that the shade of red during a total lunar eclipse can vary depending on what's happening in Earth's atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
Could you maybe elaborate on that a bit more? What are some of the factors that can influence the color?
Of course. As we discussed, the reddish hue is caused by sunlight filtering through Earth's atmosphere.
Yeah.
But the intensity and shade of that red can be influenced by a number of things.
Okay.
For example, if there's been a recent volcanic eruption and there's a lot of dust and ash particles in the upper atmosphere, the eclipse might appear a deeper, darker red, almost like a blood orange.
So it's like Earth's atmosphere is acting as a giant filter.
Right.
Altering the color of the light that reaches the moon. That's fascinating.
It is. And it's not just volcanic eruptions.
Oh.
Air pollution, forest fires, even large dust storms can affect the shade of red we see during a lunar eclipse. So in a way, the eclipse is giving us a glimpse into the state of our planet's atmosphere.
That's a remarkable thought. It's like we're not just observing a celestial event.
Yeah.
We're also getting a subtle message from Earth itself.
Precisely. And it highlights the interconnectedness of everything in our universe.
I love that perspective.
Yeah.
It makes this eclipse even more meaningful. So, as we approach this upcoming event, should we be on the lookout for any other subtle details or variations? What else might surprise us?
Well, one thing to keep in mind is that the moon's brightness during totality can also vary.
Okay.
It's not just about the shade of red, but also about how much light is actually reaching the moon.
Yeah.
This depends on how centrally the moon passes through the Earth's shadow, as we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
But it can also be affected by the amount of dust and clouds in Earth's atmosphere.
So even if two eclipses have a similar shade of red, one might appear brighter or dimmer than the other.
Exactly. And it's these subtle variations that make each lunar eclipse unique and unpredictable.
Right.
We can make predictions based on what we know, but there's always an element of surprise when it comes to these celestial events.
That's what makes it so exciting. We know the basics,
right,
but there's always something new to discover.
You've got it. And that's what makes astronomy so captivating. It's a blend of scientific understanding and pure wonder.
Well said. It sounds like we're in for a real treat with this upcoming lunar eclipse.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see what unfolds and what stories it inspires.
Me neither. And I encourage everyone listening to approach this event with a sense of curiosity and awe.
Yeah.
Observe the subtle details, contemplate its meaning, and perhaps even create your own stories and interpretations. After all, we're all part of this grand cosmic narrative.
Mm-hmm. Beautifully put. And with that, I think it's time for us to transition to our final thoughts on this lunar eclipse extravaganza. We've traveled through the science, the timing, photography tips, even delved into those cultural myths and interpretations surrounding lunar eclipses.
Yeah.
But as we wrap up our exploration of this upcoming celestial event,
right,
I'm left with a sense of awe and a lingering question.
Oh, what's that?
Well, we've talked about how full moons have profoundly impacted human culture and history.
Right.
But I'm curious, how do you think different civilizations throughout time might have reacted to and interpreted a total lunar eclipse?
That's a fascinating question to ponder. We touched on some myths and legends, but there must have been countless ways people tried to make sense of this phenomenon.
Right.
Imagine the ancient Egyptians, with their reverence for the sun and moon, witnessing the moon seemingly vanish from the sky,
right,
only to reappear in a blood-red hue.
Or think about the Mayans, renowned for their astronomical knowledge and intricate calendars. How might they have incorporated a lunar eclipse into their cosmic understanding?
It's intriguing to consider, isn't it? And it's not just ancient civilizations.
Yeah.
Even today, different cultures worldwide hold unique beliefs and traditions associated with lunar eclipses.
It reminds us that we all share the same sky, but view it through different lenses shaped by our culture, history, and personal experiences.
Beautifully put. As you witness this total lunar eclipse, I encourage you to tap into your own sense of wonder and curiosity. Observe the event, contemplate its meaning, and perhaps even create your own stories and interpretations.
I love that idea, turning this cosmic event into a personal exploration of the universe and our place within it.
Exactly. And if you're feeling inspired, we'd love to hear your thoughts and reflections. Share your experiences, photos, and insights using hashtag Meteorology Matters. Let's weave a virtual tapestry of awe and wonder as we collectively witness this celestial masterpiece.
What a beautiful thought. Let's turn this lunar eclipse into a shared human experience. And remember, even though the eclipse itself may last only a few hours, the memories and insights it sparks can stay with us for a lifetime.
So well said. As the moon begins its journey into Earth's shadow, let's embrace the darkness, marvel at the celestial dance, and allow ourselves to be awestruck by the wonders of the universe.
Until next time, cosmic explorers, keep looking up and never stop questioning the mysteries of the night sky.